and you're very welcome along to the very first Ella Magazine podcast. My name is Scott the Butler, and in studio with me is my lovely co-host, Jenny Butler. How are you, Mrs.?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Thanks. Very excited about this first of our new series of podcasts here on Ella Magazine. I guess it's the next step.
It is the next phase two.
Yeah, phase two, we're calling it. If anyone's been watching or reading our posts on our Facebook page, of course, if you haven't checked it out yet, facebook.com/ Ella Magazine. We have said it's phase two because we launched our website recently. We're going to be redesigning our website. We're also launching a digital issue. And then this, of course, as well, the podcast. So we're starting to get slowly multimedia.
We're busy.
We're slightly busy.
Slightly busy. So I suppose be good to tell people what is Ella and who's it for?
Good question. Okay, well, first of all, Ella Magazine, the word Ella is the Irish word or the Gaelic word for other. It actually has five different meanings. So depending on the context, it can mean other, another, next, more, or else. So say, for example, on Pubble, Ella means the other community or the other people, whereas on Cade Came, Ella could mean the next step. So I thought, because of the context and, you know, how flexible the word is, I thought it was pretty apt to use in a publication that was going to be for the LGBT community, because they are sometimes seen as, you know, the other. So I thought it was pretty apt and, you know, in some ways, a way of, in an artistic way, you know, reclaiming that sort of concept or that perception of the LGBT community. So it's a publication and it's a project for the LGBT community on the island of Ireland, but also anywhere or anyone, I should say, that is interested on a different view or a different perspective on issues. You know, we have so many different articles already on the website that deal with, you know, say, for example, the blood ban that was recently lifted in Canada. We have marriage equality articles from, you know, Nevada and other states in the US. And of course, then we've been covering stuff in the UK as well. So it's not just for Ireland, but it's really, you know, the LGBT community, that anyone who wants to read something else.
And speaking of international audiences, big step forward for France. Their first gay marriage was televised live in Montpellier. So that was Vincent Auton and Bruno Boileau. Apologies for the pronunciation there, any French listeners. Somebody feel free to correct me, email us in.
Yeah, absolutely. You can also tweet us in as well. We probably should say at this point, it's at Ella Magazine. And remember, Ella is spelled E-I-L-E. Yeah, I was watching it earlier because we've recorded this podcast on Wednesday evening. So just a few hours before we popped into the studio here, we were able to, at least I was able to watch the marriage ceremony. It was being broadcast live. I know BBC were broadcasting it live, even though obviously the entire ceremony was in French, and it was only during certain parts that the newscaster was translating a bit as they went back into English. Thankfully, my college French wasn't necessarily too bad, but yeah, it was a really, really sweet moment. The mayor of Montpellier conducted the ceremony herself, which I just thought it was so unusual to see someone, you know, obviously the head of a city, you could say, be directly involved in a civil ceremony. But obviously she understood. Hélène Mandreau, I think was her name. And again, apologies for the mispronunciation. But it was really, really beautiful, some of the stuff that she was saying as well. You know, one of the things as well that really got to me, it really made me feel very, very emotional, was je n'ai pas peur maintenant, I'm no longer afraid. And when she said that, now obviously it was within the context of talking about France as a, you know, now coming to a point where it had recognized that, you know, gay and lesbian people or same-sex couples have just as much rights as, mm-hmm. you know, their heterosexual counterparts. You know, the context was that France had finally realized and finally come to the point where they could say, yes, all our citizens are equal. And of course, it goes back to the three philosophical, you know, reasons or grounds that France was built on: fraternité, égalité, liberté. So, you know, brotherhood or fraternity, equality and freedom.
And especially poignant amid, I mean, I'm reading reports here that the mayor got death threats for her participation in the ceremony.
This was really strange. The security was raised so high because of the fact that the first ever same-sex marriage ceremony was going to be taking place in Montpellier in France after François Hollande brought in the legislation recently. She did get threats on the phone, and they weren't necessarily too sure what the reaction was going to be in the city. Now, because it's not necessarily a massive city, you know, we're not talking about a city on the size of, you know, Paris or London or Berlin here, but it is still a reasonably big city. There were mixed views in the city, you know, amongst the people that various different media groups were talking to, people on the streets, and it was quite of a mixed reaction in terms of what they thought of the day's events. But there weren't as many protests, so there wasn't really any aggravation on kind of on street level while the ceremony was taking place. And thankfully, I know, you know, certain of the media outlets, they weren't necessarily focusing on the negative side of things. It was more the positive aspect. Like I said, I was watching it on BBC News, and all they were covering was the ceremony. So I actually thought that was surprisingly, to use your word, as you said earlier, surprisingly poignant, especially for an organisation like that, that usually just focus on the facts.
Yeah.
But I guess they realised that this isn't necessarily just, you know, another story to do with facts and figures. This was to do with emotion just as much.
It's people's as lives else. At the end of the day, you know.
Absolutely. And it was a moment of history, regardless of what side you may be on.
Yeah. Also kind of not unusual, but I suppose maybe it is a bit unusual, the fact that François Hollande, in his campaign, one of his pledges was to introduce gay marriage. And is he slightly under a year or over a year in office? And he's actually done that.
Yeah.
How many politicians actually do that? How many politicians go around and say, I'm going to do this for everybody, it's going to be great, vote for me, and then actually do it?
That is such a good point, because I think especially here in Ireland, we get so you know, disheartened by politics in general. It doesn't necessarily have to be about specific politicians, but we could easily, I think, you know, we as a nation just, we have a pastime of giving out or, you know, or complaining about politicians here. So to see someone like that, you know, actually carry out what he said or achieve what he said he was going to do is actually quite shocking. In comparison to so many, you know, different politicians, whether it's in Ireland or in the UK or in the US. So it is really, really strange. Having said that, you know, he's not necessarily in a bad group, because the amount of pro-LGBT statements that Barack Obama has made has been so historic. So definitely Hollande is trying to be something of a European counterpart, maybe. I think we probably should mention as well David Cameron, of course, the British Prime Minister, because he is coming under a lot of stress at the moment within his own party in Westminster because of the fact that he is so pro marriage equality, whereas his own party, the Conservative Party, isn't really that mad about the idea. They're not that supportive. So he's coming under a lot of stress, even though he's so pro it. And something similar seems to be happening in France as well. Hollande obviously pushed this act through, and, you know, as we would say here in Ireland, fair play to him. But it's really strange the amount of reaction that is getting as well. You know, we can't talk about this type of event without talking about the riots that took place in Paris as well. Mm-hmm. It was between 150,000 and 200,000. The reports were varied.
Yeah.
But the fact that so many people came out in protest of the fact that this act came in to introduce same-sex marriage in France, that was bizarre.
I don't think anybody expected that.
No.
To be honest, that was indeed bizarre. Like, even the statistics I was reading for it, reports suggesting tens of thousands of people took to the streets for that, and around 100 protesters were arrested for refusing to leave the area sort of after the crowd had sort of dispersed. But I mean, I think when you look at something like that, there's always going to be a few people, no matter how many people, that whether they believe in the issue or not, they're just determined to cause a fight. They're just out to cause violence. And I think that's the dangerous part with things like this, where that message that they're trying to send largely peacefully, you know, although, you know, obviously most people wouldn't be in agreement with them, you know, but largely peacefully, it has to be said.
Yeah.
And then you have a few people who just are out for a fight. And unfortunately, that's what gets focused on out of that. You know?
And I do think in fairness to both sides of really any argument, I think that is a very good point to be made. And also that it's something that can be forgotten, that if, you know, if you go to a protest and all of a sudden riots break out, most news agencies or most media organizations will report on the fact that
there was a riot.
That there was a riot, with very few journalists or, again, organizations necessarily asking how. How did that happen? How did it break out? You know, what changed from there being, say, in this case in Paris, you know, a relatively peaceful, tense but peaceful day, and then all of a sudden it just broke out at the last minute into violence. So who was behind that? Why did that happen all of a sudden? What, you know, why did it not happen earlier if it was going to happen by the people who wanted to organize it, you know?
Yeah.
It's one of the issues that I think, you know, people need to at times take a step back from and go, okay, well, that's what's happened, but why did it happen?
Especially from a journalistic point of view. I mean, ethical journalism is hopefully something that is still alive and well, but sometimes you might think it's dead and gone in certain places and with certain publications. But yeah. Ethical journalism, what's your source? Where is it coming from?
Yeah.
What's the reason for it? Yeah. Why? That's the central question.
True.
Why?
True.
And a lot of people are just happy to splash a photograph on the front page of somebody doing something terrible and that's it. Riots, you know, wherever else it is.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. I think from our own work in the media here in Ireland is that, you know, we get to see different perspectives of, say, you know, certain publications will just sensationalize something. Other publications will probably try and take a bit more of an equal view on it, or maybe a deeper look into things. And I think, you know, it's mainly up to the reader to decide themselves, right, well, what exactly is going on here and what do I want to find out from it? Because sadly, that's also a decision that a lot of us make on a daily level, whether it's consciously or subconsciously. We're slowly getting into the idea of, you know, media and journalism in general, but you know, I guess it is something that affects us, especially in terms of LGBT news stories, whether it's in France or in Europe or indeed in the US or elsewhere. Let us know what you think. And you know, of course, this is a podcast that's available for download, you know, no matter where you're listening to it or indeed when, but do get in touch with us and let us know what you think. You can tweet us at Ella Magazine, and again, that's EILE Magazine. Of course, France isn't the only country in Europe to recently be talking about same-sex marriage and marriage equality. Scotland and Northern Ireland are also two countries in the UK that are debating the issue at the moment. And to bring in another of our Ella contributors, we have on the phone Stephen Donnan from Belfast. Stephen, you're welcome along to the first podcast.
Hello.
Hello, how are you, sir?
I'm not too bad, guys. How are you?
Not too
bad.
So let's get into it. We have recently heard that Holyrood in Scotland has announced that the Scottish government are going to introduce marriage equality legislation for Scotland within the next month.
Yeah, that's right. It's been a bit of a surprise because the Scottish government has been debating about this for a while and had announced that we're going to bring forward legislation sometime before the next elections in 2015 or 16. But no one's seen it coming this quickly. Alex Neil, he is the Health and Social Care Secretary in Scotland. He declared that the Scottish Government would introduce a same-sex marriage bill to the Parliament before the end of June. And it kind of falls on the coattails of the UK, or sorry, England and Wales, bringing about legislation in the House of Lords and the House of Commons, which is going through at the moment. In fact, tonight there is another committee meeting on it, so it's still going through the House of Commons.
Stephen, I guess, sorry to cut across you. I guess that this may be slightly confusing for any of our listeners, maybe in, you know, the US, or maybe that just aren't necessarily au fait with UK politics.
Of course.
But because of the devolved government in Scotland and Northern Ireland, basically what's going through Westminster at the moment is only for England and Wales. And that's
right.
So Scotland is going to be different and Northern Ireland is different. We'll talk about Northern Ireland slightly later on. But in terms of Scotland, basically they're able to bring in legislation independent of what London is doing.
Yes, that's right. I mean, there are still certain things that the Scottish government can't do that England and Wales are the whole of the UK legislates in together. But when it comes to equality issues, Scotland is different because they legislate for themselves. And equal marriage is one of those. So they're able to potentially reject any calls for marriage equality or implement them separately and independently. Even if England and Wales weren't doing it, they could still do it by themselves.
That's a really interesting situation, and I guess it's quite unique in terms of politics, on especially on this side of the Atlantic. So I guess in terms of, you know, what Scotland has recently announced, how is that going to affect, maybe, I guess considering the area that you're in at the moment, how is that going to affect Northern Ireland?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it, that everyone's talking about over here at the moment. Well, the interesting thing about this is that the move to legalise marriage equality in England, Scotland and Wales will have absolutely no effect on this side of the pond whatsoever. We have civil partnerships here. We had them before the devolved government came in, and I would be keen to say that if we had devolution here before that, we wouldn't even have civil partnerships due to the conservative nature of some of the parties here that are in government. But yeah, if marriage equality is legalised in England, Wales and Scotland, if a gay couple gets married in any of those three countries and comes back to Northern Ireland to live, they will no longer be married at all, any sense.
And that is such a bizarre idea. And I guess, you know, it will be very, very strange as well then if the Republic of Ireland brings in same-sex marriage. And then that'll be on one side of the border with Northern Ireland.
Yep.
And then on the other side of the Irish Sea, then you have all of Britain. So surely, you know, there must be a way that, you know, Northern Ireland would have to fall into line.
Well, technically it doesn't have to, because of the structures built into place with the Good Friday Agreement and the St. Andrews Agreement, which means that Northern Ireland can legalise equality measures as it sees fit, depending on the parties in government. And right now, the DUP are the biggest party, and we all know that they're not in favour at all, and never will be, probably. I would be very surprised if they ever were. But there could be legal challenges. In fact, I think Amnesty International have already taken a legal challenge up about this to the UK High Court. But the problem with it is that until legislation passes in England, Scotland and Wales, nothing can really be done, because no one knows where the dust is going to settle. And it kind of leaves couples in a bit of a limbo.
Yeah, and I think probably that's forgotten about in some ways, the actual couples who are living in various different parts of the UK. Stephen, an educated guess, and, you know, let's hopefully leave this as the last question for now and come back to it soon, but as an educated guess, which will come in first? Well, out of the three countries, you could say, or maybe even four countries, Scotland, England and Wales, or the Republic?
I would hazard a guess and say that it's likely that the Republic of Ireland will probably legalise it before England and Wales, because of the nature of the legislators here and there. Because of the fact that it might put to a referendum in the Republic, might expedite it, whereas England and Wales, to be honest, it's probably neck and neck, but I reckon Northern Ireland will be the last and Scotland will be third. That's just my educated guess.
Okay. So we're not going to go to the bookmakers just yet with it, but we'll see. Yeah. We'll see who comes first. Still, either way, France have indeed beaten us to it. It was a great images coming from the city hall in Montpellier today, and hopefully we'll see something similar on this side of the English Channel as well. In the meantime, indeed. Stephen, thanks a million for coming on to the very first podcast. Hopefully, we'll have you back very soon for the next few.
My pleasure, Scott.
Thanks, Stephen.
Bye.
And that's about it for our very first Ella Magazine podcast. So if you want to get in touch about any of the issues we've been speaking about, or if you want to let us know your opinions on anything, email us, ellamagazine@outlook.com. We're also on Twitter, @EllaMagazine, that's E-I-L-E magazine, or on Facebook, facebook.com/EllaMagazine. Again, Ella is E-I-L-E.
And once again, thank you very, very much for tuning in or for listening to this very first podcast. We'll be back with a second very, very soon. But in the meantime, thanks again for listening, and talk to you soon.